Morning, everyone. So this is it. Our last and final class before everyone has a summer vacation. Everyone gets to go off out and about. So I figure we'll have our last class, and then real vacation starts. No joke. Okay. So now we spoke last week and we talked about it in different ideas. But what's the idea of muksa? And the very basic idea of muksa was that muksa really just means that you set something aside. Now things can be set aside for many different purposes. For on the one hand, they can be set aside because I have no use for them on Shabbos. And specifically, I have no use for them on Shabbos and Shabbos alone. For example, this is what we spoke about last week, a hammer. A hammer has plenty of use throughout the week. The only time it doesn't have use is on Shabbos, because I'm not going to start hammering things on Shabbos, because one is prohibited to build things in Shabbos. Hammering in a nail into the wall, that's an Isser building, probably an Isser microphone. There's also, there's definitely an Isser. One is not allowed to build on Shabbos. So therefore, fine, a hammer has no Shabbos use. Now, once something has no Shabbos use, that means that I have now set it aside. I have been mekatza it. I have set it aside from planning to use it. And Chazal came along and said, you know what? If you don't have a plan on using something on Shabbos, so we don't want you using that on Shabbos, because then things that, you know, who knows what could happen. The world can get crazy. They have all different reasons why Chazal decided to make it, either because they were nervous you were going to carry it, or because they were nervous you were going to do some other things. But the long and short of it was, they said, listen, once you have something which you weren't planning on using on Shabbos, you can't all of a sudden decide that I'm going to use it on Shabbos. So if the reason why I can't use it on Shabbos is because specific to Shabbos I can't use it, so then came along Chazal, they said that is called muksa. Now we should remember, anything that basically fits that category, and there are obviously, you know, whenever you give these types of classes, you always have to be nervous because there are exceptions to every rule. So you give the rules and someone says, wait a minute, what about this? You say, well, that's an exception. So of course, all I can do is give the rules, and then the exceptions will have to come up whenever they come up. But the very simple rules, when you have something that really has functionality, it is a functioning vessel, it is a functioning utensil. It just happens to be that I can't use it on Shabbos, because usually its usage on Shabbos is usually associated with something forbidden. So then what it becomes is, it becomes muksa machmas iser. It becomes something that is muksa, that is set aside because it is prohibited to use on Shabbos. Now those things were a later decree made by Nehemiah, Ezra, the people who are coming around when the second Beis Hamikdash is built. That's when they came along and they said, we are having this concept called muksa. Before that happened, generations and generations before that. And as we saw last week, it came about in its most practical form was when David HaMelech died. David HaMelech passes away on Shabbos. And after he passes away on Shabbos, Shlomo, his son, is not sure what to do with him. He says, he's not alive anymore, so I can't move him. What am I supposed to do? They had whatever answer they had, but there it's a whole different type of muksa. What it is there are things that have no functionality ever. Sunday through, all 7 days a week, there is absolutely no use. A dead body has no use throughout the entire week. There is no use. A rock, a stick, a stone, all these different things, they have no use throughout all 7 days of the week. So it's not just that I'm not using a rock because there is something prohibited associated with the usage of a rock, for example, like a hammer. I'm not using a hammer because there's something prohibited associated with the usage of a hammer, but on Sunday it has all the use in the world. A rock doesn't have use ever, not on Shabbos, not on Sunday, not on Monday, not on Tuesday. You can give it a use, but in its most basic form, a rock has absolutely no purpose. Not no purpose, it has no actual usage for me. Those things are called muksa machmas gufo. They are inherently a problem. They are inherently muksa, even though, inherently muksa. We'll just translate that. Now, what's the difference? Who cares? What's the difference why it's a muksa? Let something be muksa because there's something prohibited associated with it, or let it be muksa because it has no use. What's the difference? Well, there's a major difference. The difference is that something that just happens to be that it doesn't have a Shabbos use, like a hammer, or something is muksa machmas iser, it is because something prohibited is associated with it, so then there are certain times when I'm allowed to move it. If, for example, like we said last week, if I have to use it for a permissible purpose, I'd be allowed to use it for that, or if I need the spot where it occupies, I would be allowed to use it. So if we're using our hammer as an example, and I have my hammer, so a hammer, we said, it's muksa because it is associated with negative things, not negative, it's being associated with work type things, so I can't use it on Shabbos. But then all of a sudden I'm standing there, and I bought a whole package of walnuts, and I'm sitting there, and I'm saying, how in the world am I going to crack this walnut? So, all these different options, I'm trying, I say, oh, I have an idea. I have a hammer, that ought to do the trick. So therefore, because this thing is something that usually has a purpose, it's just that because on Shabbos, the purpose that it's usually associated with is not allowed on Shabbos, one would be allowed to use it for a permissible purpose. So I can take my walnut, I can take my hammer, and I can smash my walnut. I mean, it might not be the cleanest thing in the world, but if you're able to do it, such a thing would be okay because I'm using something that, while it's true, usually has a purpose that is associated as a work type thing. If you use it for a permissible purpose, such a thing would be okay. And so too, if I need the spot that it occupies, you know, you walk into your you walk onto your Shabbos table, all of a sudden you say, "Oh my gosh, I can't believe I left my phone in the middle of my table." So again, the phone is it's a usage, it's a vessel that has usage throughout the week. It happens to be on Shabbos. It is associated with things that you're not allowed to do with it, i.e., electricity and things like that. So again, the same thing will apply that since I need the spot, even though I'm not using it for any actual function, I need the spot that it occupies. One would be able to move it for the spot that it occupies. Now those two things, the fact that you can use it for its use or for its permissible use, or the fact that you can use the spot that it occupies, that's only when you have something that usually has a function, right? A phone, a hammer, a scissors, all sorts of things that they usually have a function. It's just its function, its normal function, is usually prohibited on Shabbos. Something that has no function ever, 7 days a week, rocks, sticks, stones, they don't have a function ever. So then those types of things, because they're muksa machos gufa, they are inherently a problem. So then you no longer have the permissibility to use it for its permissible function, even if you would give it one, or for the spot of time. So if you have the same situation, you have your walnut, so a hammer, no problem, you can use it, you can open up your walnut. But then you say, oh, you know what, I remember when I was walking from shul, there was a big rock in my front yard, I can use that rock to go bang to open my walnut. That would be prohibited because since the rock has no official purpose to it, even though you want to give it a purpose, you can't do that on Shabbos, but you can't use it on Shabbos because it is inherently muksa, it inherently has no purpose, and because it inherently has no purpose, it cannot be used on Shabbos, even though you want to give it a permissible purpose. And so too, you walk into, why this would be true, I don't know, but if you walk into your dining room table and all of a sudden you see that, hey, there are a bunch of rocks on my dining room table. Again, I don't know exactly why that would be, how that would be, but if it somehow created that situation, so since those rocks now are inherently a problem, they don't have any purpose ever throughout the 7 days of the week, so you wouldn't be able to move them, you wouldn't be able to pick them up and move them, because those things would be inherently muksa, and something that is inherently muksa is not able to be used, neither if I need the spot or if I need its usage in a functional usage. Those are the two separate things.
If it's on the dining room,
so you have a big problem over here, and that's what we're going to talk about today. What in the world could you possibly do when somebody leaves a bunch of rocks on your dining room table?
Could somebody 2 years old move
them? Well, that might be it. Different. I don't want to get into kids doing work for me on Shabbos. It gets real complicated. Well, yeah, remember, you can never, there's no question, you can never tell even a kid to do any work for you. If they do it on their own, that might be a different story, but you can never tell a kid do work for you. Now, if they do it on their own, they may be able to do it, or you may be able to sit them by the table, and if they come up with it on their own intuition, that you're sitting them right by the rocks in order that they can move it, that might be okay, but you can never tell a kid to do something like that. Okay, now we got to discuss. I'll tell you where it comes up. Well, I mean, because I'm not an organized person, the reason why this comes up all the time for us is because oftentimes, on Friday afternoon, I'll be sitting here, and you know, I turn on the lights, everything looks okay, but then all of a sudden, I won't get here Shabbos because I'm not here Shabbos, but whatever, when somebody gets here Shabbos, they'll find that the tzedakah box, the pushka, is still there on the table. Now money, even though we think money has a function, a money is not considered something that has a function throughout the week, even though it does, but it doesn't really, because the money itself has no function. The money enables me to do all sorts of other things. Money enables me to buy something. But nobody could tell me that I have a usage for this quarter. Well, what could a quarter do? It can't do anything, right? It's not a hammer. A hammer has a usage. Its usage is it can bang in a nail. A quarter, a penny, even a dollar, has absolutely no use. It enables me to do something, but it doesn't have a usage associated with it. So now, what do? We get there Shabbos morning, and all of a sudden, you have a huge, your whole pushki, your whole tzedakah box sitting there on the table where you want to read the Torah. So now you have yourself an issue because you got on the table, you got to figure out a way to move it. Okay, so now we're going to talk about that. Now before we get there, we have to talk about something else. Now, what can happen is, and we'll see exactly how this happens, that if you have something that's muksa, and it is being supported by something that is not muksa, it's being helped, it's being supported, and supported doesn't have to mean the classic way you have, you like this table is supporting my phone. Okay, that's one way. But it can also happen in other ways. It can happen, let's say you maybe you can have, you know, something hanging. Let's say you have a towel hanging on the back of your, on the back of your back of your door. Or you have, we'll have to talk about this case as well. If you have frozen meat, right? Not frozen. Let me try that again. Raw meat is muksa. What function does raw meat have for you on Shabbos? None. Can't do anything with it. Nothing going to happen. So now let's say you put your raw meat on the door of your freezer. So now what can happen is you have this concept called a basis. A basis means that since it is serving the muksa, since it is the base of the muksa, it makes it, even though it's a perfectly permissible item, this table is a perfectly permissible item, but because it is supporting my phone and supporting this recorder, so then it becomes, in certain situations we'll discuss, that the table also becomes a muksa. Now, there's two things we have to always keep in mind. Thing number one, we have to keep in mind that once something becomes a basis, it transforms to being a muksa item. What do I mean by that? Let's say we have our case, we have our kids, right? They're all sitting here, and all of a sudden they say, why is your phone on the table on Shabbos? Well, let's assume they don't know, but whatever. And they pick up my phone and they move it. Now, if this table has become a basis, so even though the muksa item is no longer there, Shabbos morning I show up and I look, oh, guess what? Somehow my phone got picked up and moved. Who knows? A bird came from the sky in the middle of Friday night and picked my phone off, picked the recorder off, and it's no longer there. But if it became a bust, which we will discuss in a second, how something can become a bust, how it become a base for muksa, so then this table remains muksa even though the thing that actually made it muksa is no longer there. Which would mean, if let's say we're all, you know, you're sitting there, like the toaster is actually probably a good example. The toaster stays there all the time. So it's very likely that table over there has now become a basis. It has now become the base for the toaster. So let's even assume for a second that somehow, who knows how, you know, let's say somebody was having an event on a Friday night. And, you know, maybe they had a non-Jew, whoever they had somebody come and move that toaster. Fantastic. But then they say, great, now that we've moved the toaster, we want to use that table as the, as the drinks table. So you still couldn't move the table, even though the toaster is no longer there, it doesn't matter anymore, because once that table becomes a basis, which again, we have to define, the table itself is as if the table itself takes up the same properties that the muksa item that was on it was. So if the toaster is muksa, it means the table is muksa. And just like if your candles are muksa, so then your candle table is muksa as well. Well, even though there's no fire there anymore. By Shabbos morning, there's nothing there. There's no fire. So I want to move the table. Somehow I got rid of the candelabra, whatever it is. I want to move the table. It doesn't matter, because since the candles were muksa, therefore the table transforms. They have the same rules as the candle itself. And now it would be as if my table is a fire. Obviously not, otherwise it would be real dangerous. But the table itself is somewhat odd, like the candles itself, where you no longer would be able to move them. Okay, so now the question becomes, how does something become a basis? How does something become a base to this muksa? It's not automatic. There have to be a lot of different conditions that happen. Okay, if you start... Oh, I didn't number the pages. Well, that's a problem. Okay, well, let's try to do it without numbering pages. Okay, if you go to what would have been page 2, on the top left corner, there's a Resh Mem Zayin to tell you. So now, we're going to go through the rules of how something can become a basis. So now... if you look at the second line down, there's like a star in the towards the middle-ish, endish of the line, and he says as follows. We're talking about a rock being on top of a barrel, right? You have your wine barrel on Shabbos. Obviously, it was very common. Who wouldn't want some delicious wine on Shabbos? But I put a rock there for whatever reason. I put a rock on top of my barrel. Now he says, if I put it there with intention, I wanted it there, I decided this should be there. Not only that, and I put it there with intention that I want it to remain there at the beginning of Shabbos. So now, Osir Lahatoso Ulanaro. This has now turned into a buses. Once this has turned into a buses, the barrel, the table, whatever it's on top of, is now muksa, and there's nothing else you can do. You're out of luck. You cannot move that table anymore. You cannot move the barrel because the barrel itself is like a rock, and just like a rock, you are not allowed to move on Shabbos. So too the barrel as well becomes like that rock. You will not be able to move it on Shabbos. Okay, and now... Now he's going to bring a little bit of a machlokas. Okay, but now we have to figure out all the different rules, because there's a lot of rules that govern this type of principle.
It's only for that Shabbos, though. Once Shabbos is ended,
that ends, it's not forever and ever.
Correct. It's just for that Shabbos. As long as it's there for Shabbos, then, you know, different rules will be by the next Shabbos, depending on what you're doing. Okay. But at least we see the first rule. The first rule is that to create this type of business, it has to mean that I put it there, and I want it there, and it's there with intention to remain there. Right? So if, let's say, again, you know, you'll have two different situations there. You'll have the toaster over there, and you'll have my phone over here. The toaster stays there. That's where it is. So when it's there, it's remaining there, I assume. I mean, I don't know who put it there, actually. But the assumption is it's going to remain there over Shabbos. So you're putting it there, and your intent is that it should remain there over Shabbos. So for that table may become a basis for my toaster, as opposed to this case where I just put a phone down there without thinking about it. I was running around, whatever it is, you know, I was doing this, that, whatever before Shabbos. I just happened to put this down before Shabbos. Once you happen to put it down before Shabbos, I never had any cognitive decision to say I want to leave it there over Shabbos. I never even necessarily wanted to put it there. So then, such a thing would not become a basis. That's rule number one of how you can create a basis. Now, if you look at what would be 2, 3, if you look on page number 4, you start seeing from the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos, and he really, it's kind of a funny thing. I don't know, I mean, I assume other people see it besides me, but you find that you have like all these different svarim on Hilchos Shabbos, and each one of them, they're excellent at different chapters. You know, none of them can write a complete book. That's very good. But everyone, like, for example, Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos, when he talks about Hilchos Muktzeh, he's excellent. But on other stuff, you can't understand a word he's talking about. But Orchos Shabbos, on the other hand, will be good on other things. You know, so you have to sort of balance over where you're going to look at all these things. Okay, but a good, it keeps us on our toes. All right. If you look on the bottom, where it says Mem Ches, so the Shmir Shabbos Kehilchos defines, will tell us all about a basis. So he writes as follows. Some of this we've already heard, and we will just repeat it. Basis l'davar asur. One has a base for something that is prohibited. So then, wrote Salomar, what is this? Davar shekishala atzamototatun. Usually this thing is perfectly permissible to move. A table, perfectly permissible to move. But when it is acting as a base for your muksa item, then for example, you place something muksa on it. Oh, talibo davar muksa. Or if you hang something muksa on it, lifnei Shabbos, before Shabbos, that thing goes on it. Harehu mekabel said kol adin. It gets all the different halachas going to that next page. Shin design as kol dinim shel muksa. It gets all the regular rules of muksa. But also the talitav meshach kol Shabbos, and then you wouldn't be able to move it the entire Shabbos. Kemo hamuksa asmo, just like the actual muksa you couldn't move, so too the thing that is a base you could no longer move. And now the afila achashah husr meno muksa. Like we said, even though the muksa gets removed somehow, some way, who knows? However it got removed, I put something there. I put my candles in the beginning of Shabbos. I lit it there with intention that it should remain there for the entire Shabbos. And then all of a sudden, I wake up the next morning and I say, I don't know how it happened, but all the candles got pushed off the table. Still, it wouldn't matter since I put it there, since I was planning on leaving it there. So now that table is muksa, and therefore, even though it all gets removed, it won't matter. The table remains muksa, and one would not be able to move it on Shabbos. Now, okay. Now, if you skip ahead to Mem Tes, right, towards just under where we are, so he says, "V'tanayim hisnu Chazal." Chazal had their own set of rules. Shelipim nepach davar muksa betiltu la'aser betiltu, where it was only through these rules that things were able to switch from being just a regular table to all of a sudden to being a base for muksa. Ukvi sheivar v'sifram habam, like we're going to explain as we continue. Number one. Before he even gets to the rules, he says, "Lo hiskai mubo kol tzayim." However, if all the rules are not happening, if you don't hit on, if you don't check off every box, ain a bus nasa betilto. It will not become a buses. Okay. Now you'll say to me, okay. So if it's not a buses, what's the difference? So the biggest difference is as follows. He's about to tell us. So now, as we said, once this table becomes a basis, so then even if somehow, some way, the muksa is removed, it doesn't matter. The table is a basis, you can no longer move the table. However, if you don't hit the conditions, we'll see in a second what they are, you don't get the conditions, and for whatever reason, the table doesn't stay a basis. Let's say, for example, I forgot something there, I forgot my phone there. Now, that doesn't mean that you're allowed to move the table, but it does mean that if then the phone is removed, then you are allowed to move the table. So the table depends. These rules are going to make a big difference, because if it does become a basis, then the table itself is as if it became muksa, and then even if somehow the phone or the toast or whatever is on there, it gets removed, you can't move the table, because the table is still a basis. The table is itself muksa. However, if it's not a basis for whatever reason, well, we'll see in a second how not, if it's not a basis for whatever reason, then if that muksa gets moved somehow, some way, then you'll be able to move the table. All right, now, if we move ahead to the next page, if we move ahead to page, to the, whatever the next page, the Shin Zion on the top left, where he says there's a Nun Beis all the way, the last paragraph starts Nun Beis. And now he's going to go through each one of these, each one of his rules. Rule number one, Ein Abasas Nezar Betilt, a Abasas can never become forbidden to move our table. Ela Kishem Mukso Hunach Alav Alide Balo Shal Abasas. This was the first point we already brought up. It's got to be that the owner of the item is aware and it for sure knows about it and agrees to it, or he himself or she himself is the one who puts the muksa on that item. There is a concept throughout all the Torah that I cannot forbid your stuff on you. It's your stuff. I can't forbid your stuff. So even if, right, there's always a famous discussion, even if, let's say, I look at your car, I say, that car is unbelievable, I am going to make it my new idol. I'm going to make it up. So I bow down to your car. I bow down to your car. It's my idol. So maybe you would say, well, rules are that one is not allowed to benefit from anything that has been used for idolatry. So maybe that's it. I've now forbade your car. And you, see, that's if you ever wanted to do it, you just walk around, bow down people's cars and say, sorry, too bad, so sad. You don't get your car anymore, right? That's I'm allowed. What do you mean? I use it for my idolatry. That's it. Everybody would agree that if I, you know, if somebody comes over to me and says, here, I'd like to sell you this this boot over here. Would you like to buy it? I would say, listen, you know, it's idolatry. I can't do it. So maybe if I bow down to your car, same thing, it's idolatry. So the answer is that one is not able to forbid someone else's stuff. I cannot make your stuff into something prohibited. So even though I bow down to your stuff, the answer is it's not my stuff, so I can't make your stuff a problem. Even though I made it my God, I accepted it. That car is my God. It doesn't matter. If I don't bow, if I don't own it, I can't make someone else's stuff a problem. Now, if I bought my car and I bow down to my car would be a problem. It would be prohibited because it would be idolatry. But if I bow down to your car, so then I can't forbid your stuff. Okay, now let's say somebody comes to my table over here and they take right before Shabbos, say, I'm gonna get him. I'm gonna show that he can't use the stuff. And he walks over to my table and he empties up 16 rocks on my table. So I got a problem now because he put it there with intention. But as the Shmir Shabbos is saying, if he doesn't own the table, he cannot make it muksa. Just like if I don't own your car, I cannot make it into my idolatry. So too, if somebody doesn't own my table, I own my table. So if the owner of the table is not the one who puts it down there, so then that table will not become a bus. Now, obviously, this becomes very practical when one has children running around over there. So what happens is they put all sorts of crazy stuff on the table. But it's not, they can't make it into a bus. It's very nice that they put all their who knows what, you know, they went digging in the dirt that day and they found worms and whatever, who knows what they find. And they put it all on whatever you're going to do. But they can't make it a bus. They can't make it muksa because they don't own that table or they don't own whatever else I'm going to use. And therefore, they don't have the ability to make my stuff make my stuff muksa for them. That's rule number one. And therefore, it has to be that the owner himself or the owner herself, or at least the owner is agreed upon, even if I'm not the one who actually puts it on there, but I give you permission. I say, yes, I would like you to put that toaster on my table. But unless I have at least given permission and I'm aware of what's going on, so therefore, without that, one would not be able to make something into a bus. Well, so again, the rocks remain muksa, and the table is muksa as long as the rocks are on there. And we'll get to that soon. I mean, hopefully. Yeah. We'll get... All right, it's later than I thought. But we'll get to it as soon as we can. But we'll start talking about what happens. Fine. When it doesn't become a bus, what are my options at that point? But let's just talk... Let's try to go step by step. But at least, if I'm not the one who puts it on my table, something will not become a bus. Okay? That means this table, hypothetically, if the rocks get moved, would not be muksa anymore. All right. That's rule number one. Now, if we continue on, going ahead to Nun Gimel, as we'll follow his train of thought, because he's pretty good at it. Number two is, Ein Abasas Nasser, right on the next page, Nun Gimel, a basis can never become a basis, betiltal. Eli maniach as a muksa b'mischaven k'nei she'emunach alav. This was what we said earlier, that you have to intend that it should be there. And I should have to intend that I want it on the muksa. I, the owner, like we just said, have to want it where it is. If I don't want it there, so then such a thing is a muksa. So you say, okay. Let me give you the following example. This is a very fascinating Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham says as follows. He says, it used to be, I guess, the minhag was like this. The minhag was that you would light your candelabra on the dining room table. So far, so good. So now the dining room table becomes a basis. Fine. But he says, you know what the minhag used to be? again, I don't fully know how they did this, but I guess they had these real creative guys. They would take the tablecloth. They would be able to pull it out from underneath the candles, and then they would shake it out on Shabbos. So the Magen Avraham says, I don't understand how, forget the science behind it, how they got the tablecloth, but he says, I don't understand. Shouldn't the tablecloth be a basis as well? That was Magen Avraham's question. So it's very nice if you've explained. So he says, how could it be that the tablecloth isn't a basis? So the Magen Avraham says a very fascinating thing. He says the Magen Avraham, he says, it's because you don't care that it's on the tablecloth. It happens to be that it's on the tablecloth. It happens that's true that it's on the tablecloth. But you couldn't care less that it's on the tablecloth. You want it on the table. The tablecloth happens to be there, so it's on the tablecloth as well. So he says, if you don't want it there, if you don't care for it to be there, so therefore, such a thing would not become a basis. Now, where else does this come up? Oftentimes, let's say you have a drawer. You have a drawer with stuff in it, just stuff. You put all your stuff in this drawer. So right before Shabbos, you take out your phone, you take out your keys, you take out your wallet, you take out everything, and you put it in this drawer. Now, what did you not realize? You didn't realize that your socks happen to be in that drawer as well. So after you put your phone in your wallet and everything else, all of a sudden you get to Shabbos morning and you say, oh my gosh, my wallet is right on that pair of socks that I wanted to wear. So you may say to me, sorry, too bad, so sad. It's a basis, right? You wanted to put it there. Maybe I didn't realize the socks were there, but I wanted to put it there. I wanted to put it in this drawer. My plan was for my wallet to remain there over Shabbos, but this would be the same case as the Magen Avraham. I don't want it on my socks. I want it in the drawer, but I don't want it on my socks. So the socks would not become a basis. The drawer would, right? The drawer is where I want it. So the drawer would be a basis. And so too, by the case of the Magen Avraham, the table is a basis, but the tablecloth or the socks, that just happens to be in the middle. It just happened to be there. It was a casualty of me having too much stuff and not being organized. So that stuff, says the Magen Avraham, and therefore Shmir Shabbos is holding that way, would not become a basis because I don't want it to be on that stuff specifically. So not only does it have to be myself, but I have to want it to be exactly where it is, but even more than just where it is, I have to want it to be on that stuff. If I don't want it to be on that stuff, something will never become a basis.
So you can't open the drawer?
So you may not be able to open the drawer. So now we have this problem. Okay, remind me about that in about 6 minutes. I hope to get to that. Give me 1 second. Okay, that's option number two. That's point number two. Point number one, the owner's got to put it there. Point number two, not only does the owner have to put it there, but the owner has to want it to be exactly where it is. Point number three, if you look at Nun Dalet, so now, okay, this is somewhat off topic, but we'll just read it anyways. He just says, a basis can only become a basis, only in the following case, only if Eli maniach es hamuksa al davar hamutter, mikimichu rotsa sha davar hamutter yishamish es hamuksa. Okay, it has to be, this isn't going to happen so often, but I'll just talk it out. It would have to be in a situation where the mutter thing is servicing the muksa. Right? What does that mean? Well, isn't that always going to happen? Well, the reason why that won't happen is as follows. The reason why that won't happen is, let's say I have, let's try to come up with a case. Let's say I have a bunch of napkins on my table. And then all of a sudden, someone opens the window and that wind is blowing away my napkins. So I say, so before Shabbos, this is crazy. Well, my napkins are going to blow up. So I take my napkins, I take the rock from the floor and I put it on top of my napkins. And I say, I want my napkins to stay exactly where they are. So now, do the napkins become a basis? So the answer is they don't, because the napkins are not servicing the rock. The rock is servicing the napkins, right? It's a weird case for that action to happen. But as long as the rock is servicing, muksa is only when this table is servicing the phone. That table is servicing the toaster. When I put the rock on the napkins, why am I doing it? I'm doing it in order that the napkins stay put. So therefore my rock, my muksa is actually servicing the allowed thing, the mutter thing, the permissible thing, and therefore it would never become a basis in that situation. Again, it's a rare case to happen, but when it does happen, so then you would have that issue. Then that would never become a basis. Okay, now let's just go ahead to, number four. If you go to the next page, Nun Hei. So now this is another thing. It has to be that ain't a basis nasar v'tilton eli maniach es hamuksa al davar hamutter lifnei bein hashmashos. It has to be that I put it there before Shabbos starts with al das shishar sham kol bein hashmashos, with intention that it should remain there the entire period, the twilight period, that whole period of bein hashmashos, however long it's going to be, let's say 30 minutes, 40 minutes, give or take, from the start of Shabbos. Shabbos starts, we accept Shabbos at Shkia, well, or candlelighting, but 20 minutes after candlelighting is what we would call Shkia. That's when sunset is. That is the official beginning of Shabbos. That goes until Tesa Kochavim, which is somewhere between 19:30, 40, or 70 minutes after that time. It doesn't really matter. I mean, it does sometimes, but right now it doesn't. So whatever time, pick an arbitrary time of what you want to call Tesa Kochavim, either 19:30,
30, 42, 50, or 72 minutes after that time. That would be called Bein HaShemashes. That is called a twilight period. It's sort of day, sort of night, it's sort of in between. Okay, well, if it's sort of in between, so the halacha is that I have to expect, I have to plan that this muksa thing is going to remain on this permissible thing the entire time of Bein HaShemashes. So it has to be that before Shabbos, I, the owner, take my muksa item and I put it down in something with full thought, or at least my assumed thought is, I am putting it here with the expectation that it is going to remain there at least for the next 72 minutes after going into Shabbos. But if for whatever reason not, you know, and this is what would happen. If let's say again, I put something down and I'm just running in the shower with my intention to remove it before Shabbos or with my intention for something else to happen to it, so then it wouldn't be muksa. It wouldn't become a busas. It's only because my intention is I'm putting it down there with a cognitive decision that I'm placing it down there with the idea that it is going to remain here throughout the entire Bein HaShemashes, this entire twilight period. Now, it should be noted that this halacha is actually a dispute, between Rashi and Tosfos. This is really the opinion of Rashi. Tosfos actually says that you have to intend that the muksa is going to remain there throughout the entire Shabbos, all 25 hours of Shabbos. If for whatever reason, let's say you have a plant that it's not going to remain there for the next 25 hours, so then it would not become a basis. Now, I don't know.
So maybe your matches that you use to light your candles. Because you don't.
Okay, so that's a little bit of it's a touchy subject, I mean, throughout the postman, but it seems like it has to be that your intention is that it's going to be removed, not just that it's going to naturally go out. Like, your candles are going to naturally go out.
If you put your matches out, you don't mean to set them down for all of Shabbos, but you might have forgotten about them.
Oh, your plan, well, what are you going to do with them? The box of matches you're talking about?
Right.
Meaning you're planning on putting them away before Shabbos.
Don't intentionally.
Right, exactly. So those things, since you forgot, since you weren't placing it there with intention to leave it there over Shabbos, so that would never become a basis. Now we're again, I don't know how much it comes into play nowadays, but where it can come into play, I'll give you the example. This room is a classic example. So oftentimes, you'll have people who will, you know, use this room for whatever, for a bar mitzvah, for whatever they're using it for. So everyone comes here. So everyone wants to light the Friday night candles here. Now, obviously, there's no candelabras here. So everyone's using those little tea lights over there. Okay, so everyone, they'll put foil on that table or any table. It doesn't really matter. And they will fill up that table with a bunch of tea lights. Now, they know, right? Everyone knows that we're going to need this room tomorrow. So they say, no problem. We have our staff here, right? Whoever's catering has their staff with all sorts of people there. And then whenever at 11 o'clock, after they're done cleaning up, and by then the tea lights have gone out, they're going to throw the tea lights in the garbage, and then don't worry about it. Your table will be perfectly active. So now it becomes an interesting debate. According to Rashi, that table is now a basis. Why? Because the muksa was going to remain there throughout that entire twilight period. Throughout all 72 minutes, that table was going to have its candles on it. However, according to Tosfos, it's not true. It never became a basis because the intention was, when they lit the candles, or whoever's decision it was knew that within the next 25 hours, those tea lights were going to be removed. So because that was it, that would be an interesting machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos. Now, we hold like Rashi, that again, as long as it's there over for the next, you know, through the twilight period, and then that is when it becomes a basis. However, Mishru does bring that in the case of a real emergency, you can rely on Tosfos, if we really needed that table for whatever, who knows why. So we can rely on Tosfos, and therefore, since it's not planning to be there for all 25 hours, because it was planned to be removed before the 25-hour period, so then such a thing would not become a basis. That's just an interesting machokas, Rashi and Tosfos. Okay, now, let's get to this next point. Let's skip hay for a second. Let's go to the next page, and you'll see by number vav. On number vav. So now this is really what we spoke about before a little bit. We touched on it, that a basis has to be that it's serving the muksa. Now, that really means, by its definition, it has to mean that it's serving the muksa and the muksa only. Now, let's say you have multiple things in there. So then it's not only serving the muksa. So our drawer case. So I have a drawer, open up the drawer right before Shabbos. I throw in my phone, my this, my that, my wallet, $1,000, let's even say. I have $1,000 cash on me. I throw it in this drawer. Then all of a sudden, Shabbos day, I realize, my socks are in that drawer. Now what do I do? So now, you could say, well, it's a basis. It has $1,000 in there. Therefore, it is, so to speak, it has become negligible. It is now part of, it's like the cash itself. You can't move it. I plan to put it there. I wanted it there, and I still want it there. It's a basis. Or you say, well, no, maybe it's not serving my $1,000. It's really serving my socks. There happens to be $1,000 in there, but it's really serving my socks. Now, the halacha is as follows. The halacha is that that the truth is, it's exactly that. Something is a basis if it's only supporting the muksa, or if the most valuable thing that it's supporting is the muksa. Okay? So if I, again, in my drawer, the most valuable thing in there is something muksa, so then, since that's the most valuable thing in there, therefore we look at the drawer as if it's supporting the muksa, and therefore it will become a basis. However, how do you evaluate value? There's two ways to do it. Shlomo Zalman writes in the tshuva, the way you do it is, listen, you figure out what could you get on the market value. What's more important? $1,000 is worth $1,000. A pair of socks is worth $295. It's obviously, the $1,000 is more important, and therefore, he would tell you, you cannot open that drawer on Shabbos because the drawer has $1,000. It's very nice, it has a pair of socks, but who cares? Obviously, the $1,000 is more important. Therefore, the drawer becomes, we look at it as if it is serving my cash, and once it's serving my cash, it's now a basis. I can't do anything with it. However, Moshe in the tshuva argues, and he says, it's not the way we look at it. We look at it as we want to know, what is the value right now? What do you care about right now? So right now, it's Shabbos morning, $1,000 aren't going to help me very much. It's not going to get me anywhere. You know what I need right now? I need a pair of socks. So therefore, it says in Moshe, we care about what you care about right now. What do you care more about right now? What do you need right now? So if the socks are what you need right now, which it is, Shabbos morning, I ain't need $1,000 for nothing. So then, since it's the socks that I need right now, so he says that's what's more valuable. And therefore, he says, you would be allowed to open that drawer because we look at the socks as the most valuable item in there. And therefore, it is looked at not as a basis for something prohibited. It is actually a basis. It is supporting something that is permitted. And therefore, you would be able to open such a thing.
Right.
So it could be the purse would never become, right. It's a little bit, it's an interesting question because it could be the purse, whatever. But yes, I know, without getting too sidetracked, yes, the purse would never become a base for the wallet or the credit cards, whatever's in there. It really becomes serving the glasses or whatever else is in there because that is the stuff you need on Shabbos. Therefore, it's servicing that, and therefore the purse would not become a buses on Shabbos. Okay. Okay, great. So those are the different conditions. Those are the different rules on how something could become a basis on Shabbos. With all these, it's got to be yours, and you got to want it there. You got to want to put it there. You want to leave it there for at least the twilight period. Those are all these different rules of how something could become a basis on Shabbos. And once you fulfill all those rules, now again, this table or that drawer that you had will now become muksa as well. Even though that thing wasn't muksa, but because it is servicing that and that only, that becomes a problem. Now the question is, we'll shift the conversation to fun. Let's say one of these conditions are not filled, right? Let's take our example. It was a good example where one's kids put a bunch of rocks on your table. So it's not a buses. We said rules are rules. They don't own the table, so it is not a buses. So now that it is not a buses, what am I allowed to do? The mooks are still there. The rocks are still there. So I for sure can't pick up the rocks and move it. There's no question. Now, what can I do about the table? I need to use my table, and we said you can't move those rocks. So those rocks are inherently muksa, so I can't move the rocks. What am I supposed to do? Or the other example was I have my tzedakah box over there on the bima, and it's very nice that okay, I was disorganized, so I left it there. But now we have a problem because again, we're not picking up all that tzedakah money and moving it somewhere because you're not allowed to because money has no use, and once it has no use, you're not going to be able to move it on Shabbos. So now, what do we do? If we go back all the way to page 1, right in the beginning, you'll see, you got to find it, huh? Except that I lost it. If you go back to page 1, so you will see, he says as follows. He says, Shachach Evan, all right there in Sif Dal, two lines up from the first paragraph, whatever you want to call it, two lines up towards the bottom, towards the end of that, the bolded paragraph, there's a Dalet, and he says as follows. He says, Shachach Evan al Pichav, let's say one forgets a rock on a barrel. Oh, Mozakar, you forget that you put money on your pillow. Right before Shabbos, you took out your wallet, you put it right on your pillow. Now you have an issue because again, I can't move it because it doesn't have a usage, therefore it's a muksa. But it's not a basis because as he's saying, I was shachach, I forgot. I didn't realize. I was just running in the shower. I didn't plan to keep it there. I was planning on moving it, but I forgot. So like we said, so then rules are it does not become a basis because I didn't plan to leave it there over Shabbos. So it's not a basis. So what am I supposed to do? So he says as follows. He says, Mata chavas al tzira. Option one is that what you're allowed to do because the table or because your barrel is not muksa, you are allowed to lift your table and you are allowed to sort of slide it over and tilt it over in order that the muksa will fall off. Because since it's not a buses, right? It's not a buses because I forgot it there. It means this thing is not muksa. My pillow, my table, anything else is not muksa. Because it's not muksa, therefore I'm allowed to move that. So I'm allowed to tilt it or do something else where the muksa will slide off. And now the table is perfectly permissible for usage because it's not muksa. And it was never a bus. If it is a bus, so then you can't do that because the table itself is muksa. So you can't do anything with it. But once it's not a bus, once it's not considered a bus for whatever reason, so then I'm allowed to move the rocks, not by touching the rocks, but by touching the table and moving everything over in order when you tilt it, by moving the table, which isn't muksa, the muksa will move automatically with it. That's option one. Then he even goes further. He says, again, so you can mat the chavish, you can lean it on its side, and the ebeno falls, and the rock falls off by itself. Or, umenara kar, you can just turn over the pillow, the hamos nofen, and the money falls. Now, if we keep going to the next page, mimasa chavish ben a chavish. Now, that's very nice in certain situations. But let's say, again, you have your pillow. And while you have your pillow, you have all this money on your pillow. So my plan is to tilt the pillow over. Now, where is that going to fall? It's going to end up falling on my mattress. So it's very nice that I got it off my pillow, but I haven't accomplished anything because it's on the mattress. So now what has that done for me? I just moved it from place A to place B. I still don't want it there. So he says you can do the following thing. Yachla hagbia. You're able to pick up the pillow or you're able to pick up the table where your rocks are. Kemoshu, exactly like it is, without touching the rocks, just touching the mutter item. Ima evan lemakamacher and put it and move it to wherever you want. And then and then you're able to turn it there. So now, we now have option two. If option one is you take the mutter item, your table, your pillow, whatever you have, and you just sort of tilt it over. If that's not a possibility, either because something will break by doing that, or because it's not going to help me because it's just going to get myself back in another sticky situation, so it's just going to move it somewhere else where I don't want it. So then you're allowed to literally pick up the entire pillow, move it to where you want it to be, you know, whatever, in a closet or whatever you want your money to be, then you tilt it over, and then that's okay as well. All these things are called tiltum and atad. It's tiltal, you're moving it through an intermediary, right? Through something else. You're not touching the actual muksa, you're moving it through something else. So all those things are going to be okay, right? Either to move it and tilt it right there, or to move it to a spot where it's more convenient for you and to tilt it over there. Those are all tiltum and atad. All those things will be okay. So now, this is really the option. If something is a buses, you have an issue, because once it is a buses, you can't move the table. But if it's not a buses, right, because you didn't hit these rules, so then you'd be allowed to move the mutter part of it, move the thing that it's being supported by when it's not a buses, and either tilt it over or pick it up, move it, and then tilt it over from there. Okay, let's just get to one last thing, and then we'll call it there. So the last case that we tried to discuss is, okay, so this works so far. This has accomplished a lot. So now if you have anything on your table, we know what to do. Pick up the table, do this, do that. If you have something on your pillow, we know what to do. But what about our last case? I have, you know, hundreds of dollars of coins. I don't know how much is in there. Let's even say it's $30 of coins sitting there on the bima. Now, we're not going to pick it up and tilt it over. First of all, because the it's too heavy. It's just not happening. And secondly, tilting over $30 worth of coins is going to make a mess. So that's not happening either. So now, what's my plan? What am I going to do? So you have the irresponsible one, who forgot to move the thing off the table. So now, what in the world are we going to do? We have all these coins sitting there. You have this pushki sitting there on the table. What in the world are we going to do? So if you look, there is this unbelievable. I don't even know if I printed it out. There's this unbelievable thing that I did print it out. If you look, I'm trying to remember where it is. It's sort of towards. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, if you look at it, on the last, I think it's the last page. If you look at the last page, so you will see that the Shulchan Aruch has another idea, where he says, so far we've talked about, and the truth is, let's just talk. So here he says, if you look, 1, 2, 3, 4, if you go four lines up, again, in those like boldish lines in that first paragraph, if you go four lines up, in the towards the beginning of the line, it starts reading, V'tiltzel begufo. If you move something with your body, not with my hands, with the rest of my body, so, a few turned over a aser mutter. I'm allowed to move things with my body. I can blow on it. I can lift it with my teeth. I can lift it with my foot. I can do anything as long as it's not with my hands. The whole idea of muksa was you can't move things with your hands. If I can accomplish that, I can move something by any way, shape, or form that's not my hands, so then Shulchan Aruch says it's perfectly permissible. So, if let's say I have a couple dollars on my pillow and I just blow it off, literally, that's perfectly okay because, again, I didn't move with my hands. As long as I don't move with my hands, it's going to be perfectly okay to move that way. Even if I'm trying to protect whatever I want to do with it. Again, it doesn't fully help still with my pushkey over here. But that's another way to do things is if even if something is a bust. Let's say this table, it's a bust. So I don't want to lift it. I don't want to do anything with it. So what do I do with the rocks? So what can I do with the rocks? You can sort of knock it off with, you know, something that's not your hand. Kick it off, whatever you want to do with it. And then once you do that, that's also going to be okay. As long as you're not moving anything with your hands, that's always going to be a permissible option to move muksa without using your hands. Something would be okay. I'll just finish off. This is really what I'll finish off with. This is what Shlomo Zalman says. He says, what is the reason that you're allowed to move things without using your hands? He says, because that's not normal. So when Chazal came along and they said, you're not allowed to move muksa, they said, whatever the normal way to move muksa, we don't want you to do that. But if you do it in an abnormal fashion, so then it's okay. And now it really works well if we think about the reasons behind muksa. Where did they come up with muksa? Because they didn't want you to forget and start carrying things outside. They didn't want you to forget and start saying, well, once I'm moving a hammer anyways, let me just bang in a nail or something. You know what I mean? They don't want you to forget. So as long as I'm doing it in an abnormal fashion, I'm naturally going to remember that, oh, I can't do such a thing. Says Rosh Hashanah. He says, you know what another way would be? If let's say you have something that's usually normal to carry with one person, and you carry it with two people. So he says, that would be another way, which would be abnormal. And he says, even though you both use your hands, but it's two people instead of one. He says, that would be the same thing as carrying it with your body, moving with your body. And therefore, he would say that would be okay. So if let's say, again, you come here on Shabbos morning, and all of a sudden you have all this tzedakah box sitting there with coins and coins and coins and coins. So you say, what are our options? We're not lifting up the table because it's too heavy. We're not going to pick it up with our teeth because it ain't happening. And we're not going to just knock it off because then you're just going to have a big mess. So what do we do? So what you do is you have two people grab it. Each have one hand. Now, a tzedakah can is abnormal for two people to be carrying one little can. I mean, come on. Well, who would do that already? And then once that happens, Rosh Hashanah says that's an abnormal way. Obviously, by it being an abnormal, it says if I would be moving with my teeth. And then he says such a thing is okay. So if you ever, I mean, I've used this a couple of times when you're in a real pickle, that there's nothing else to use. You can't do it any other way. And the only other way is that you're going to do it with another person. When you do it with another person, you both grab it. And when you both grab it, even though you're both using your hands, since that is just as abnormal as you're trying to move something with my foot, such a thing would be okay. And the Chazal never came along, they never said that's a problem, and therefore in a real dire circumstances, one can do that if they absolutely have to. All right, we will stop over here.